Deal, etc. versus TriMass Corporation. Mr. Stone.
Thank you, Your Honor. And as you know, I am James Stone of Jackson Lewis, representing the appellant defendant TriMass Corporation. As you know, this is an appeal of a 301 action to compel arbitration. However, Your Honors, in our view, this is not a typical arbitration case or not a typical 301 appeal case. For two major reasons, which we believe are closely interrelated, we urge that this court rule in favor of TriMass and order the district court here to hold a trial to determine the arbitrability of the dispute between TriMass and the steelworkers.
And there's a dispute about the agreement, and there's an arbitration clause which says disputes are to be resolved by the arbitrator. And why shouldn't the arbitrator decide whether this unsigned contract, so-called contract, is valid?
Well, Your Honor, as you know, the question of arbitrability is first for the trial court to decide. Now, we understand
Look, the arbitration clause says you arbitrate disputes arising under the agreement. This dispute arises under the agreement. Now, there may be another agreement which cancels this agreement. Well, fine, the arbitrator can decide that.
But, Your Honor, it says the arbitration clause here is different than the arbitration clause under airline pilots.
No,
airline.
It isn't.
The airline pilots, Your Honor, the arbitration clause says it covered the application of the agreement. The arbitration clause here was much narrower. The arbitration clause here said only that there would be arbitration over disputes over the terms of the agreement.
I don't understand the difference.
Well, Your Honor, the courts that in the court here in airline pilots, your decision, Your Honor, relied on the fact that the arbitration clause in airline pilots specifically provided that all issues concerning the interpretation and application of the agreement are for arbitrators to decide, including, therefore, the applicability of the agreement in that dispute. And then the court specifically ruled in airline pilots that if there was extrinsic evidence, objective extrinsic evidence, then that evidence might have to be considered. But in airline pilots, there was not. There was just argument over what certain clauses in the agreement meant, and that was an issue as to the merits, which was properly decided by the arbitrator
here. Aren't you basically just relying on AT&T Technologies and the general proposition that you can't impose arbitration unless the parties agree to it or the court orders it?
Yes, Your Honor, that is precisely correct. We do. AT&T is the original case.
That seems to me to be preempted, or whatever the proper term is, by this agreement here that all things are going to be arbitrated.
Well, Your Honor, but why in many of these cases is there the inclusion of the application agreement? A district court decision in Illinois, and we know that's not binding on this court, but in the county of McHenry, had this exact question where a arbitration clause did not include disputes over the applicability of the arbitration agreement, but only over the terms, and it ruled that it was for the court, not for an arbitrator to decide. And we think that is the exact situation here. You have a clause that does not include the applicability of the agreement, only disputes over the terms of the agreement, coupled with abundant extrinsic evidence. I mean, there were many...
How do you distinguish between terms and applicability? That escapes me a little bit.
Well, a dispute over the terms, in the case of a neutrality agreement, might be there's an organizing drive going on at a plant. Is the company truly being neutral or not? That would clearly be a dispute over the terms. But a dispute over the applicability of that agreement would be, does it apply to this facility or not? And that, I think, is the dispute that is before the court today and was before the court below. We believe that
well,
is the decision.
Isn't the dispute here specifically over whether this is required, whether this these later agreements, whatever they are, these oral discussions, merely affected the order within which these plants were to be organized, and the other point of view is that they changed the conditions.
Well, yes, Your Honor, the union's position. But to that point, that's exactly why we believe a trial is required.
That's interpreting the terms of the agreement.
No, it was a subsequent agreement, Your Honor, where the parties, in our view, specifically agreed not to redo the sequence, but specifically agreed to consider.
Where is the text of the arbitration clause?
I'm sorry, within the neutrality agreement? You want the original source?
The arbitration clause.
Yeah. It's, Your Honor, in the, if you, probably the quickest way to find it would be in our short appendix to our original brief blue book.
Yeah, what page?
And that would be in the, I believe, the second appendix, which would be G on page 8 of Exhibit B.
Any alleged violation or dispute involving the terms of this framework agreement. So wouldn't that include any dispute over whether the agreement had been violated?
It would involve any dispute over whether the agreement was violated, but it wouldn't involve inherently a dispute over the agreement, whether the agreement applied. I mean, this would be like
Wait a second. If the agreement can't be violated if it's been superseded, right? That's your argument. It was superseded by another contract.
Well, there's another contract.
And you would say when you litigate the alleged violation, you say, well, maybe this conduct violated the terms of the agreement, but the agreement has been superseded, and therefore it's not a violation of the terms, because the terms aren't.
But it goes to whether there really was an agreement to arbitrate at all.
That's just logic chopping. That's just. No, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, but then, Your Honor, what becomes of AT&T? That the trial court should make some determination whether the parties agree.
As Judge Cudahy said, of course, the general principle is that the arbitrator doesn't determine arbitrability unless they want him to. But if you have a standard arbitration clause, among the issues that the arbitrator decides is whether the contract has been superseded, in which event the terms. I mean, suppose you had an agreement which simply modified the terms. Would you say that a dispute involving that, would you say that was not arbitrable?
No, Your Honor, we would not.
You were arguing that it was just a modification of terms?
No, Your Honor, we would not.
So what's the difference between modification and abrogation?
Application. Here there was a change of the agreement that restricted the term.
That would be true of a modification of the terms, right? I mean, modify the critical terms. What's the difference between that and abrogation?
Abrogation or application, I'm sorry.
Abrogation. What's the difference between modification and abrogation?
Well, modification, Your Honor, implies a smaller change, I would assume.
That's not worth litigating. That's too complicated.
It's not
worthwhile getting into this business of a modification is small and abrogation is big. That didn't make any sense. You have a dispute that arises under the agreement, and one of the questions is, has the agreement been modified, abrogated, what have you? And that's all part of the underlying contract dispute.
Your Honor, to me this is more analogous, if I can give an analogy, which isn't in our briefs, but I think describes the situation. If I had a contract to sell a lot of airplanes from Airbus, say, to a major airline, and there was a subsequent agreement that said, no, I'm not going to buy 40 airplanes, I'm only going to buy 10 airplanes. And later on, the Airbus in that situation said, well, we want to arbitrate that situation under the original agreement. We don't think the purchaser in this case should be required, the airline in that case should be required to arbitrate.
What if the other party says this modification of the terms was invalid and therefore the original contract has been violated?
Well, they could present that at trial, Your Honor.
No. That's for the arbitrator to decide, because it's part of the dispute over the violation.
But, Your Honor, I think that leads to a slippery slope you have an arbitration.
Your position is too complicated. And also, it doesn't make any sense, because the arbitrator is in a much better position than a judge to decide about the effect of this subsequent so-called contract, this unsigned contract.
With all due respect to labor arbitrators, Your Honor, this is not even a collective bargaining agreement. We agree, and certainly I've arbitrated many cases where arbitrators are well-equipped to resolve collective bargaining agreements, but this is not a collective bargaining agreement. There were no represented employees. It's a traditional contract, and we think the courts...
Why do you have an arbitration clause?
To take care of routine disputes that arise under the contract, not under the application of the contract.
Well, David Stockman and this other fellow, it looked like they...
Ron Bloom.
Put a lot of effort into trying to put an agreement into place that would avoid problems in the future, and looks like they didn't succeed.
No, Your Honor, there were a number of problems even extrinsic to this this case. I agree with you on that statement. I believe my time is up. Thank you, Your
Honor. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Ms. Macy?
Thank you, Your Honors. I guess I will start out disagreeing with appellant's attorney. I think this is a very typical case. This is quite a broad arbitration clause. It is not. There is no limitation in the clause. There are two kinds of cases where you have a difficult issue with respect to arbitrability. And one would be a case, and there are a couple of decisions, I think the Corman and the Stevens decisions out of this court cover that, but it's the kind of case where the issue is whether the party resisting arbitration is a party to an arbitration agreement. In other words, have they pulled out of the agreement? Does the agreement exist? Were they parties to this agreement? That kind of thing is a difficult issue of arbitrability, and it's an issue that courts have to spend some time looking at evidence, even extrinsic evidence, to decide. Then the other issue that can come up with respect to arbitrability, and this happens in some collective bargaining agreements, is where the parties carve out some subject from the arbitration clause. For instance, it's not untypical for parties to carve out benefit questions, issues under benefit plans from the arbitration provision. Those are cases where the court needs to look at the arbitration clause, look at the facts of the dispute, and decide whether they're covered by the arbitration clause or not. In this case, and I think this is I think the court's clear on this, but I just want to repeat, the district court in this case did decide the issue of arbitrability. The district court said this is the court's role to decide whether this is arbitrable, and the court did decide arbitrability. And the court decided arbitrability based on the language of the arbitration clause, which says not just disputes involving the terms of the agreement, but any alleged violation or dispute involving the terms of the agreement. And I just want to point out some of the terms of the agreement that the union alleges were violated by the company's refusal to accord neutrality and to enter into all the neutrality, to accord neutrality at the Auburn, Indiana plant. Under the framework agreement, Section B, there's a provision that says that that TriMass commits to adopt a position of neutrality, and then I'm quoting, in the event the union seeks to represent any non-represented employees of the company. In Section C of the framework agreement, under organizing procedures, the framework agreement defines covered workplace as, quote, any workplace controlled by the company, and then I'm not quoting here, with employees who are eligible to be represented by a union. Section E has a definition of the scope of the agreement and says that the agreement, the neutrality agreement, covers affiliates, parents, and ventures, defines covered entity with respect to percentage of control, and then it says that the company agrees to cause all of its parents, affiliates, and ventures to become parties to the framework agreement and to comply with its neutrality provisions. So the court had ample basis for deciding that this particular dispute was within the scope of the arbitration clause. The other point I would like to make, and it's in the briefs, but it doesn't appear very clearly. The agreement that the union is attempting to enforce, the arbitration agreement and the framework neutrality agreement, the neutrality agreement is actually two. It's a side letter and a framework agreement. Both of those agreements are the TriMass agreements, and the TriMass agreements were entered into in June of 2003. They were negotiated and executed after this whole series of airport meetings. The airport meetings were based on the original Heartland agreement. Heartland acquired these other companies. So all these arguments about modification of the agreement, this agreement couldn't have been modified unless it was modified prospectively. The TriMass agreement occurred after all these airport meetings. And the
Is the arbitration clause in the Heartland?
Yes. The arbitration clause is virtually identical in both provisions. But if there was...
They're using the TriMass agreement to modify the Heartland agreement? Is that
no, what the Heartland agreement does is say that all of our... Whenever our other companies, Heartland is basically just a holding right. company, so our other companies will execute their own neutrality agreement. And the argument that the appellant is making is that the neutrality agreement for TriMass was modified by these airport meetings and by these oral agreements. And the point, which maybe I'm being too simplistic or obvious, but the TriMass agreement, which is the operative agreement here, was negotiated after the airport meeting. So whatever oral agreement existed before that was merged into the TriMass agreement. And the TriMass agreement doesn't include any exclusions. It still has the same language that I just read to you, saying all of our employees that are subject to organization are covered. We will exclude.
Isn't that an argument on the merits rather than an argument about arbitrability?
Yes. And I'm only pointing it out because I just think that that's right. kind of an argument that's sort of hanging out there in a funny way. In terms of what's really in dispute, there's some suggestion, and maybe this also goes to the merit, but there's some suggestion that it's clear that there was this other agreement. And really what it's clear is that there was a sequencing agreement, that there was an agreement, we'll help you out with these plants, these are the better plants for you to organize. The steelworkers agreed, we'll go here. And actually they followed the sequencing agreement. But the sequencing agreement only went through the first quarter of 2004. Then in 2004, there's a question of all these other plants. Here's where the dispute is. TriMass says, well, you have to come to us and get our agreement to organize. Steelworkers said, you know, we'll come up with a new, in their mind, we'll come up with a new sequencing agreement, but if we can't agree, we'll pick our targets again. And I think that's what's happened, and that's where everything is broken down. It is unfortunate, and because the parties really had an idea of taking the whole issue of organizing out of legal processes and doing it in a kind of a consensual, orderly way for the benefit of the company, for the benefit of the union, for the benefit of employees, avoiding the kind of strife. But the keystone of that agreement is the arbitration clause. And that arbitration clause was carefully done. There's some question that was raised by appellant's attorney that arbitrators wouldn't be competent to decide this type of agreement. But actually, if you look at the agreement in the record, there's a list of arbitrators. The parties actually went so far as to select 9 very experienced arbitrators as people who they trust to interpret this agreement. And I think the district court decided to leave this decision, what is the agreement, what have the parties agreed to, have they modified their agreement, to the arbitrator. And I think the court should respect that decision.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And thank you, Mr. Stone. Your time had expired.